Greetings, everyone. This is Eric Andelin, Senior Photogrammetry Workflow Specialist with SimActive, and you're listening to Episode 23 of the Pixels and Points Podcast, Cleaning Up Drone Images Before Processing. Does it pay off? And with me, I have my guests, Robert Leek, Head of Commercial Sales, and Nick Oniello, Growth Manager with Quantum Systems. Gentlemen, I'll let you introduce yourselves. Robert, let's start with you.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining. And thanks, Eric, for inviting us. As Eric said, my name is Robert Leek. I am the head of commercial sales at Quantum Systems. I've been working at Quantum Systems for about 2 years now and in drones for a little bit longer than that. But yeah, Quantum Systems, you know, we've been in the industry for about 10 years now. And we've got our Trinity Pro product, which is the flagship model on the commercial side, which is the culmination of, again, almost 10 years worth of development and perfecting of the airframe and all of the systems that go around that. So yeah, we're excited to chat with you, Eric, and SimActive about how our drone imagery runs in through your system.
Very good. Nick?
Yes, Eric, thanks again. As Robert said, my name is Nick Oniello. I've been at Quantum Systems since last August. Came aboard after spending some time at Phase 1. Been in the drone industry a handful of years, but back on the manufacturing side of selling a fixed-wing aircraft with our own Trinity Pro. So excited to dig in today to SimActive and Correlator 3D.
Very cool. So on our side, on my side, my background is in aerial mapping, photogrammetry, all that stuff. And I got involved in drones quite a while back. Actually, a coworker of mine was just in White Sands, New Mexico, and he sent me a picture of him in White Sands, New Mexico. And I said, hey, I lost my first drone in White Sands, New Mexico. I wasn't supposed to be flying a DJI, but I was. And I lost it. It was white, and the sands are white, and I lost it in the horizon. Man, talk about a scary, scary day that was. But we have all moved on from that. And my point is we've kind of moved on from multi-rotors in a lot of cases because of the fixed wing and its ability to capture much larger areas. And your airframe specifically is something that's been tested out. You can collect lots of data. Robert, you want to give me a little bit of background on the new airframes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think to your story, we've all been there. We've all had those experiences where something's gone wrong. And indeed, you know, the entire industry has moved a lot in the last couple of years. Specifically on our side, you know, I mentioned that we've had about 10 years in this industry now. We started out just like that with a very simple airframe, and it's been a long road to improve it and to get it to the point where it is now. The Trinity Pro, which is our latest and flagship product, it's an extremely performant airframe, can fly for up to 90 minutes, can carry an array of different powerful sensors. And really, you know, we've seen a trend in this industry over the last couple of years where it used to be the case where people were just doing simple, small projects. And in a lot of cases, a multi-rotor would serve just fine for that. But as the industry has adopted the technology more and more and become more and more dependent on the data sets and the data capture, we've seen those projects increase massively in scale and complexity. And that's exactly where something like the Trinity Pro is really able to provide the most benefit by being the most aerodynamic platform on the market, being able to fly for the longest time, and to be able to use, you know, these extremely high-performance sensors to capture detail and data on a level that was just not possible a couple of years ago.
So I agree. The reality is maybe when we started tinkering with drones and doing little mapping projects, it was maybe 20 or 40 acres or something like that, and it was easy to capture with a multi-rotor. But now, honestly, since the technology is proven and we see it as a tool to capture data where there may not be a full-size aircraft around or the conditions don't work for a full-size aircraft, and you can bring in one of these drones and it will capture large amounts of data. And, you know, I think in the past, Nick, you told me that you've run up to about 2,000 images in flight. So when you consider daisy chaining those and you're capturing corridors, that all of a sudden becomes 10, 20,000 images, depending on the sensor. You could times that by five. As we speak about that, one of the really cool things about your drones is the ability to hot swap payloads. So, Nick, tell me a little bit about the payloads you guys offer.
Yeah, we have a fully integrated, easy-to-swap payload solution for various applications, from RGB to LiDAR, with even MicroSense and our Red Edge P. So right now, currently, we have five available payloads from an RGB with the Sony RX1R2. And then what we're speaking about specifically today within Correlator 3D and SimActive, the Oblique D2M. We have a LiDAR payload option as well, the Cube 240. And then we have a couple options from MicroSense with the Red Edge P and the Ultim PT. And then exciting news, I think which Robert and senior management here at Quantum Systems has done a good job of, is adapting technology and in the payload sector. So later this year, we're going to be rolling out a 61 megapixel RGB payload with the Sony. We're calling the LR1. And then later this year, along with the phase one P5, which is going to be 128 megapixels. So specific niche for that high resolution, Eric, with you've worked your fair share of phase one images, but the Sony LR1 61 megapixel will be a heavy hitter for us. And then as you probably have heard at GOE, we are releasing our Cube 640 payload, and that is from Yellowscan. This is our new LiDAR payload. Some quick features about that. You're going to embed a camera for the RGB for the colorization of the point cloud. That's a small little 8 megapixel, I believe it is. And then you're getting 640 points per second instead of 240 points per second. You're getting a larger field of view. You're getting about 175 degrees field of view within our payload. It sets up in, it's technically it's 360, but with us embedding it into the system, into the body of the Trinity Pro, it gives you, cuts it down to about 170 degrees, 175 degrees, getting it about, right now we're seeing anywhere upwards and towards an hour of flight time with that.
Very good. So actually I was able to see the phase one camera last week as well. So that's impressive. And you're right, the 61 megapixel. Super cool. You get great resolution out of that. As you said, we're working a little bit. We're doing some work with the multi-camera payload, which is really cool, the obliques.
A reminder to the listeners, this podcast was produced from a webinar that did have a visual component to it. You can find that webinar, plus all of our previous webinars, on our website, simactive.com, under the Learning tab, if you'd like to follow along.
So as we talk about this, the ability to capture such large areas means you're capturing a large amount of images. And, you know, it's always about speed. Let's get it captured. Let's get it processed as fast as possible. And there are a few things that you can do to prepare for that. That is cleaning up your data set before you bring it into our software or anybody else's software. Let's talk a little bit about ease of use. Can you fill me in on your flight management software?
Yeah, I'll jump in on that. So we have our own proprietary control software, control and command software. It's called Cubase, and it handles everything from the, you know, the mission planning and preparation through to the actual control of the flight, and then of course with the post-flight processing, so things like your geotagging and PPK workflows and stuff like that.
So I would assume that you can bring in a project boundary and design the flight lines specifically around that boundary, and
probably, yeah, absolutely,
and probably it's aware of which sensor you're doing your mapping with, so it'll calculate out all those flight lines per that sensor.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, you can drag your design files, you can design KML files, this kind of stuff. You know, there's some automatic features that can do, you know, basic flight plan extraction from those files, or you can of course manually do them as well. And yes, of course, once you're connected to the drone, it's able to detect the correct payload and do all of that kind of calculation for you. So it's basically as simple as drawing out the polygon that you want to fly in, or the area that you want to cover, setting up a takeoff and landing, set the parameters that you need to, you know, things like what altitude or what resolution you're looking for, overlap, a couple of different parameters like that, and that's pretty much it. The rest of the flight is completely autonomous.
Okay, and one thing to bring up that people may not be aware of, but takeoff and landing, that's one of the really cool things about your system. And Nick, you want to fill us in on how that goes with the Quantum System drones?
For sure. So we have basically two different, we call, landing modes now with the Trinity Pro. For most users out there today with the F90, there was the one landing mode. Well, with the Trinity Pro, we have two. So we are a vertical takeoff and landing, so we are VTOL, so it takes off vertical. And then landing features, we have a circular approach, which most are used to. And then now with this type of, you know, even corridor work, Eric, you mentioned earlier, with a linear approach coming into land. So those are two key features aboard our Trinity Pro feature as that. And so there's minimum and max, you know, from wind takeoff and landing to hover speeds, transition heights, takeoff altitudes, that sort of thing, which is all done in Cubase, which Robert hit on earlier.
And it's all guided in the software as well. So it's pretty simple and straightforward to set up. Basically, you know, you click on the map where you want to be and where you want to go, and define things like, you know, if there's buildings or trees around like that, obviously you want to make sure you're avoiding those. But aside from that, the software basically guides you through the whole process.
Having been a pilot, the VTOL capabilities are huge. That's fantastic. So we're going to talk about a few things, and those topics would be validating our exterior orientations and our camera information, identifying and removing unnecessary images, choosing the right workflow for the project and then taking a hands-on approach to processing. Again, this is all about cleaning your data set up, being ready before you drop that data set in so that you can start processing. So first thing is validating and understanding what your exterior orientations are and your camera information. So for example, I know the phase one, when you guys bring the phase one on board, it'll come with a calibration report, most likely. The Sony and the multispectral don't necessarily have a calibration report, but you do have information on those cameras. So you have your pixel size, your focal length, and that's pretty much all you need. In reality, most software, they have a database which has all these cameras in it, and it gets added to as new cameras come around. So the exterior orientations, the only thing I would say to that is just in case you need it, again, know your pixel size, know your focal length, and you should be good to go. As far as the exterior orientations, now we get into some challenging things. I would assume, Nick, when you guys are flying, that the software is geotagging the images in, so you're getting lat long and altitude into the exit files.
That's correct. We have a post-process workflow. We would like to think it's super simple for most workflows out there today on that end for grabbing that type of information which you need to throw into these softwares, processing softwares. But yeah, we make that readily available.
I always like to say that is your backup plan. If you've at least got geotagged images, you can bring the project into one space and correct everything relative to itself. But we know that in this world, people are using an RTK or a PPK solution. So that being the case, when you process out and you're using a PPK solution, maybe Robert, you can fill me in on what you would get, you know, as a exit file for that.
The process is pretty much the same regardless of whether or not you're doing PPK or not. PPK or not. Of course, if you are doing a PPK workflow, you just need to provide the Rhinex files to go through that. But what comes out the other end is all of the photos will have highly accurate XYZ positions, as well as the accuracy value for that. And that all gets embedded into the XIF data or the XMP data. In addition to that, you know, not every software is compatible with reading that information. So we can also, of course, spit that out in like a CSV file.
Perfect. That's typically what we do in Correlated 3D. If somebody is post-processed, then there's usually a CSV or something like that you can bring with you. Sometimes, again, it's just a highly precise XYZ position. Sometimes it comes along with roll, pitch, and yaw, depending on what's tied to the aircraft and all that. So
yeah,
great to have that. People need to understand that roll, pitch, and yaw, the omega kappa phi, we would say, that is the position of the aircraft, not necessarily the sensor. If that sensor happens to be nadir, then yes, it's the same. But people have to be aware of that. And you can work with just XYZ, but when you have those other positions, it's great to have. So on our end, when a user brings that file in, the one thing they need to know right off the bat is, was there a elevation offset value applied? That may be a setting in the post-processing software that says, you know, apply this geoid, and therefore your altitude reported will actually match what's on the ground. If it's not done that way, then you can just apply a geoid offset and that'll bring everything into that relative space. But you know, that's something someone just needs to be aware of when they bring the data in. If they do bring it in and they start to process and there was a geoid offset not applied, then they'll notice that they'll miss their control points by a couple meters, 30 meters, something like that. But it's consistent. And if you see a consistent error, that just means your geoid's off. You don't have a geoid offset and you can make that correction and bring it back in. But that goes to the conversation about being prepared where you do that, because now you're 15 minutes into processing and you realize that you need to move your data set. We want people to be aware of it when they're doing that. So that pretty much covers what we would do with bringing in our exterior orientations. Of course, the other thing would be the CSV file that's exported from your post-processing software will have the headers to tell them this is northern easting or lat long, altitude, XYZ, all that. And it's pretty simple from there. The next step would be identifying and removing unnecessary images. We talked about daisy chaining data sets or flights. And when we do that, you know, especially in quarter situation, or we're capturing a large area where, you know, we've gone beyond our 1.5 hour flight time, so we have to break it up, you are going to create your missions with overlap. You're just going to do it because it's a smart thing to do. And it costs zero to capture imagery. So what we want to do then is, if we've got overlapping missions, we want to remove overlapping photos from those missions. And sometimes that can be 20, 30% of the images that you bring into a project. So whether you do that in Correlated 3D, which I'll show here in a bit, or whether you do that in some other software, remove the images if you can. The next thing would be overlapping images. Nick, what do you guys typically capture or recommend capturing overlap at?
We do 75-70 is what Cubase has it set at.
Okay. So you can consider, depending on the project that you're flying, maybe taking out every other image in the photo shoot or every other flight line, depending on what type of deliverable you're trying to make. So that's always something to consider. As long as your overlap stays close to 60-30, you should be in good shape. The golden rule of photogrammetry is 60-30. So anything more is better. So that's good to have. The next thing would be, even if it's just a single mission, you're going to capture outside of your project boundary just because you want to make sure you have stereo coverage or coverage, overlapping images of those areas. So before you start mapping, again, you can eliminate those images. Now, the challenge is, especially with the data set we're going to show, is that you have oblique images in the data set. So we've got a nadir image, and then we've got forward, backward, right, and left. So now, so that's a lot of data, because every time you get an exposure, you get one for every sensor, which is really cool, but it starts to create bigger data sets. And the reason you would do this, the reason you would use this type of camera is if you were looking to do some kind of modeling or capture building facades, things like that. So overlap is different, you know, because you have oblique cameras facing in all directions. You don't necessarily have to fly completely to the project boundary, but you want to. But if you don't panic. There's plenty of imagery to use in that data set. Nick, you flew this mission that we're going to look at. Any comments on how you flew it or anything like that?
Yes, unfortunately, this was an area by a customer of ours, an area we're familiar with. But like you said, I think the goal of this oblique D2M, when you reached out, Eric, for us to capture this, is we want to ensure, you know, that remarkable detail, slanted surfaces, you know, this 3D mesh of high-rise areas, industrial environments. We wanted some detailed type areas for this. This was around, I think it was around 300 acres we flew. We flew, I think it was around 400 feet, moving at 17 meters a second, I believe it was.
Yeah, I know on our end, we were very excited to see it. It's, I think it was around 323 images, 350 images per camera. So it's a decent sized data set. The challenge is always bringing in all of those cameras, referencing them, getting them all into the same location so that you can create that seamless model. So we were very excited to work with that. We can bring in multiple cameras and do that type of work. So the next thing I would mention is choosing the right workflow for your project. It's great to be able to take your, you know, your data set and just throw it in and push the button and wait for an output, but the black box solution doesn't work all the time. So with Correlated 3D, we have a couple different options. So you can basically write a batch program, kick it off in the field and run it just, you know, from a terminal if you want. But the beauty of that is it's literally a script that you can just save and edit and reuse. And what we do is we provide a handful of templates for users. So across the top of Correlator 3D is the photogrammetric workflow from left to right. The first thing you see is a cog. And in that cog, there are a handful of templates. One is for a quick project overview. The other is to create a true ortho. The next is classic photogrammetry. Then we have one for a fast ortho. And then last is a 3D model. Really, all we're doing is giving you the workflow written out in a script, and then you can turn features on and off based on how you want it to process. And that works great, especially if you know the site. For example, Nick, you've got customers that do mine sites and things like that on a continuous basis. Perfect. That would be exactly what you're looking for. Again, if the data set is not tricky, project area is not tricky, you don't have any control, this is a great way to go. The hands-on approach. This is what we like to teach people, because we'd rather them be confident in a hands-on approach before they move into some automated approach. So the benefit of that is it allows you to incrementally go through the processing steps. And if you see any errors as you're moving along, you can back up and correct those, which things become a challenge when you use multiple sensors. Maybe you're using a LiDAR sensor and an RGB sensor. You kind of want a little bit more control in how you process your data. So this allows the user to spot those issues and correct them along the way. Do you have any additional comments?
I guess I'll jump in first there. You've said a lot of great things there, Eric, and I think the data will sort of speak for itself. We're really excited about all of the kinds of data that you can produce with the Trinity Unity Pro. Yeah, at the end of the day, the big talking point often is the data, right? We make a nice drone, but we understand that our customers are fundamentally looking for data, and we're just trying to make the most reliable and, you know, effective and efficient way of capturing that data. And certainly on the oblique topics specifically, you know, you're going to see in this data set just how incredibly detailed and impressive it looks. It's a special payload for a specific kind of application, but it's absolutely unmatched in terms of the detail and the resolution that you get out of it. And yes, that does mean it takes a little bit more to process, and certainly having the right kind of software and the right kind of workflows, that becomes really important when you're starting to work with this kind of thing. Like I said, you'll see for yourself with the data quality and what comes out of it as to what can really be achieved with this combination of drone and payload.
Nick, in this case, you were the pilot, so but you have a lot of experience now with multi-camera systems. What kind of comments do you have?
Great question. I mean, like, I think I hit on the topic, you know, various applications. So, I mean, various types of environments. I think, you know, for us, where you're really going to see some advantages are that large area, you know, specifically speaking, anywhere from 400, 500 acres or larger. I think we can really cover some ground. I mean, the way we can fly for up to an hour, I think for this one, we flew around 70 minutes for this type of mission. It's super simple. I don't know how else to put it. When I came aboard in August, you want to talk about ease of use, getting up and running with the Trinity Pro, super simple. You should never have to touch the remote controller. Everything is visible and running on Cubase, within your Windows-based laptop, computer, field-based, but eager for everyone to see this data set.
Very good. Once again, thank you guys for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
So the reality is, capture as many images as you possibly can, but before you go into processing, remove the unnecessary images. Every image takes time to process. The more you can take out, the faster your processing will go. Again, I'd like to thank Robert and Nick for their time. I'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share on social media. Until next time, thank you.